The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Welcome to the Sidelines. I'm Matt Dolph. I'm back again with Ty Anderson, and we got a lot to talk about, and a lot to talk about with the local hockey team. So we definitely have a lot of hockey fans that listen to this podcast, so I think they'll be happy about that. Maybe we or they won't be happy about what the Bruins actually end up doing, but, I mean, again, they're popping up again. I think Don Sweeney at least knows he's got to make some moves. I think you guys agree with me. Ty, first thing I need to get to is the infamous three-emoji tweet earlier today.
Yeah.
Ty, yeah. Makes a little hint that that Tuukka Rask may be headed for – he may be learning how to yodel, put it that way. Only in the United States of America where there are mountains and a team name might be named after something involving a mountain. So, yeah, you know, and people were pissed, which I guess you have to expect on Twitter. But it seems like you quickly realize, it's like, all right, that wasn't worth it. Fine.
Yeah, well, you know, I first of all, I forgot the question mark, which is what I meant to add to it. So people automatically assumed that I meant that he was already in the process of being traded to Colorado. It was over. It was this. And you know, I think that people are so starved for an actual trade or big news or something like that, that, listen, part of that's my fault for not recognizing that. But, yeah, talking to someone today, two people, actually, it seems like there's interest from the Avalanche in a Tuukka Rask deal, if it does shape up that way. I mean, I, for the love of God, I don't know what to make about what Don Sweeney said on Monday, talking about Rask, saying that, you know, he still thinks he's a part of their future. He still thinks he's a part of their team. I mean,
he doesn't want to say we're trading him.
Exactly. And that's sort of the thing, right? Because I do think that that's a genuine comment. It felt genuine to me, but at the same time, it could be GM speak, because to your point, yeah, you don't want to say we're going to trade this guy, because if you don't get market value and you don't trade him, well, that's an awkward first day of training camp, wouldn't you say? And I think the Bruins kind of live that already with their pursuit of John Tavares, where by going after Tavares, David Krejci knew that if that happened, he was gone. And David Backes knew that if that happened, he was gone. And it was a little awkward for those guys. So
yeah, but I mean, I don't know what you could do about that. I mean, they met him in a room or whatever, and that's going to get out to someone.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. But I do think, though, going back to the whole Tuukka thing, it's just, I do think that if this move does happen, I would put Colorado as number one, which I did on our website when I was ranking all 31 teams as destinations for them.
They need that goal. Colorado, that's like all they need.
Yeah, and speaking of someone, there's been communication. The Bruins were approached by two teams that were not on his list of teams he would go to. Obviously, his trade protection expires at the end of the week. So we'll see if anything transpires out of that. But I do think that there are teams that are making calls on Tuukka, and the Colorado Avalanche are one of them. So it's something worth watching here. But for me, going back to the emoji, going back to the tweet, I hate single sourcing anything. I don't like doing that. I don't have many sources, but I don't like having just one and then running with it. So I wanted to verify. I jumped the gun a little bit, and I deleted. And people with cartoon emojis and cartoon avatars are mad at me for some reason. So
That's whatever. People choose to be mad, and that's why I tweeted earlier. It's like, just go outside, dude. Don't do something that pisses you off. And I don't think Twitter actually makes anyone happy. It just serves to piss everybody off.
And
there's plenty of reporters. There's prominent reporters out there that definitely one source a lot of stuff. So you know, it's nothing like, I'm not judging anyone. It's just, a lot of stuff gets reported or bandied about that never happens. So, I mean, I wouldn't feel too guilty about it, honestly.
No. And I think where I fucked up was where I said, I'm having fun. Like, so people thought I was joking, but I'm saying, you know, me doing the emoji tease, it's like, all right, I'm having fun with the idea. not having fun with you. This is legit. Right. This is real. I'm not just making shit up. But yeah, I think so. There were some missteps, but hey, at the end of the day, whatever.
Yeah, but again, just people. Yeah, people just can't. They can't forgive anything these days. They can't understand anything these days.
No,
everyone just wants to be mad, especially on that cesspool.
Yeah, so
the giant rolling comment section, and that's like, what's there's nothing worse on the internet than comment sections.
There's nothing worse than that.
What I always say about that, please.
So to recap, if there is a trade, just watch the Avalanche and the Bruins. I think Rask obviously being on the Bruins side of things, I think both sides have something that the other could use. If you're talking
Avs being good players, they have a lot of those.
Yeah, and they have a window.
Can we get Makar?
No, but you could get Nikita Zadorov, who is a gigantic defenseman, and some people like those. So some people being you. So
I would like that. Yeah. What about like Burakovsky? Is he too good? Is that not possible?
Well, he's an RFA.
Okay.
So you need to sign him.
Yeah, I didn't look this up.
But he's one. I mean, yeah, he'd make sense for them. He'd kind of be a middle sixer. I mean,
they're going to get Kadri, aren't they?
If you're getting him, I'd like to ditch, you know, Bjork or Richie, to be honest with you.
Right.
Because it's a little redundant, in my opinion, to have another sort of middle sixer who you'd want to see, I guess, like in that kind of role. But I like Burakovsky. I've liked him when he's with Washington.
I like him. That's why I'm asking. Yeah.
But there are pieces there. There are pieces there, but I think people should temper their expectations that if they do end up trading him, they're not going to get, you know, one of the Avalanche's core pieces or one of their top prospects. It's going to be more role players. So for to me, it's about what is their desire to move to Tugarask? Is it the front office saying we need just move on? I don't care what it is. Or is it we need to make a good hockey trade here and have money left over to sign one of the market's better goaltenders?
He could really help our hockey club. Yeah, I think they need to make a real hockey trade.
Yeah,
that's for sure. If it turned into somehow a Gabriel Landeskog trade, I mean, the pants are coming off.
Yeah, but
that's,
you know,
that's what would happen. I know. I know. I wouldn't seriously ask for something like that, but yeah.
I mean, if you could make a trade with them and get a defenseman or a forward, but also get Grubauer or the backup Frank Kuz. I might be saying it incorrectly. I'm sorry. If you could get him, I mean, I wouldn't be against that. It's not perfect, but it's not horrible either. So
even like Jonas Donskoy too, isn't he on Colorado?
Yeah, he's on Colorado. I mean, that's an option too. So I just think that if that trade does happen, that's a team to watch. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
All right, yeah, those are, I guess, the other guys we mentioned are realistic options. They're not, I mean, outside of prospects or draft picks or whatever, but I doubt there would be that kind of trade with Tuukka Rask. Even though, like, I don't know, $7 million isn't absurd for a guy who was just nominated for a Vezina, you know, and has only 1 year left. So, no, I don't know, I feel like there's got to be some value there, right?
No,
not everybody else, other teams don't look at Tuukka the way, like, psychos in Boston do, like he sucks, you know?
And that's sort of I think the fundamental problem we talk about Tuukka Rask being traded or staying is that I think people often conflate how they feel about him with how the team feels about him, they're not the same.
And other teams
who share
the league.
Yeah, there are people who share the idea of saying, you know, there are people in that front office that are a little bit worried about where he's going, you know, per se.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's ever to the degree of, oh, they hate him. You know, I think that's a fan-driven thing more than anything else.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I don't know. He's on the trade market. He's off the trade market. I don't know. We'll see.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Mike Palmer, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
I need to ask before we go to the other trade rumors, like, does it get way less likely that they make a trade if they don't do it during the draft? That's something I was thinking about. You're more in tune with this kind of stuff as I am, as far as the timing of it. if they say the draft ends and they don't make a big trade, does that mean that they're, I don't know, that they're staying the course with what they have? I don't know.
Typically, yes, but this year, no, because the draft is today. What's today's date? The 8th? The 7th? Something like that?
It's the 7th.
It's the 7th. Okay. The season is
It's Wednesday, Ty. It's Wednesday.
The season's not going to begin until January 1st. So you still have another 4 months here before hockey happens. So that's, you know, that it's almost like the offseason is just beginning in a way. So I think what you have here is not set in stone. And teams are going to, I think there are going to be teams who have financial crunches based on if they're allowed to have fans in the building or if, you know, if they're going to open at capacity, whatever the case may be. So maybe that forces a hand or a trade of some sort. So under most circumstances, I would say that if you do nothing here, you tend to like your group. But you're going to have to wait and see now with what happens with free agency this weekend. You know, who doesn't have a chair? You know, when the dust settles a week from Friday, when guys are still in the market, and teams make decisions from there. I mean, think about what happened in 2013, right? When they had the lockout and the cup ended in like June 26th or whatever it was. The Bruins traded Sagan on the 4th of July, and they didn't sign a Ginla for, I think, another 2 or 3 days.
Right. I was golfing when that happened. I'll never forget that.
I was on a boat when it happened. Yeah, it sucked. but yeah, I just think that's something that this is that kind of off season, right? Where things may happen a little bit more delayed than they typically would under a normal off season.
That's true. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. Yeah. That's what I think. I just want to inform the fans, like, you could still hold out hope if they make a trade, even if it doesn't happen like in the next 2 days. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we're all itching for them to make a big move, and it just continually feels like it's going to happen. So, I don't know. We'll see. What just came out like this afternoon, was it? Or I don't know. Pierre LeBrun says the Bruins are one of two teams interested in Brandon Saad. I mean, from the sound of what he wrote, the aforementioned Colorado Avalanche are the team that's really in on Saad. So they look like they must feel like they're that kind of player away from winning a Stanley Cup. So, I mean, maybe that complicates their chances of sending like a roster player to the Bruins if they were going to get Tuca, or maybe it impacts Tuca, period. But he threw in the Bruins and says, like, they're also interested. So, I mean, I don't know how interested really they are, but, I mean, you've heard my spiel a million times about needing a guy with size and a two-way game and a good forecheck and all that stuff. And I think Saad would be perfect. And, I mean, I thought he was like 40 years old when I went to look him up. The guy's only 27. He's won a couple cups. He'd be a great piece. He wouldn't be the answer in the top six, but he'd be absolutely perfect, I think, with Charlie Coyle. So, what's your thought on if they got Saad?
Yeah, this isn't the first time they've been linked to him. I believe it happened. I want to say last deadline, when Chicago was in full on seller mode. I don't hate him. I don't love the contract. $6 million is a bit much for him, I think, at this stage, if he's going to be on your third line. But at the same time, I do think they need more established scoring on that left side, and he would address that. You look at their left side, middle six right now behind Marchand, it's DeBrusque, who we've talked about has been inconsistent, and then it's Bjork or Richie. So they could use a bit more, you know, certifiable pop there, and so he checks that box. And what you brought about the Avalanche is, yeah, the Avalanche are sort of where the Bruins were 2 years ago, where they have this two-year window here where they can buy big and they can make big trades and they can sign guys to big dollar deals before they have to pay the Makars. They sign Rantanen and McKinnon is signed, but they're going to make a decision on Landeskog as well.
They have a little bit of a window with all of those guys. They're not going to have all of those guys forever, I don't think. So.
Exactly. And so this is sort of what the Bruins had in 2018 and 2019. Yeah. When they traded for Rick Nash and they traded for Coyle and Johansson, it's something similar here. So the Avalanche are going to be connected to everybody, you know, anybody who can help their scoring. I mean, Taylor Hall, if he takes a 1 year deal to reestablish his market value with a contender, my bet would be it's going to be Colorado. I think that makes the most sense for him. So They're going to be in on everybody, so that's not surprising. So you'll have to see what they can offer and if you can best that offer if these talks get serious.
Yeah, well, you know, you could be in on everything, but you got to do something. If they're in on everything and they do nothing, then what does that do? Except you got stuff to talk about, I guess.
Well, we're seeing that right now with Ekman Larson, aren't we? I mean,
right. Yeah. Now that's not going to happen. That's fizzling out. That's
unlikely. I mean, that's
that Coke has gone flat.
Yes. Yes. They left it in the sun for too long, and now it's self-aware.
They put it back in the fridge with like an inch left. It's like, what are you doing?
Just throw it out.
Chug that straight out of the bottle, man. Come on.
Yeah. I don't know what to make about the Ekman Larson sort of talks. I just think that you look at Arizona, they're desperate to cut this contract from their books. They owe money to the arena. The owner is allegedly a billionaire, but we don't know that. They're months behind on arena payments. I mean, they're months behind.
Jeez,
on
really? Paying.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, the Bruins are saying, well, we want you to eat some of the contract. And the Coyotes are saying, dude, we really can't do that. We need to just get rid of this contract. So that's obviously a problem, I think. And you know, it's 7 years of eating money. And that's hard. It's hard for a team to agree to do it, to do that, you know? We're going to have to wait and see what happens there. But I would agree that it seems unlikely, just given what it feels like Arizona wants to accomplish here, which is a total dump of this contract.
Yeah, well, eight and a quarter. I mean, Ekman Larson's good, but I mean, he's not what is Drew Doughty? Drew Doughty makes 11, so he's like the highest paid. Someone else, or Carlson, makes around that much, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Those Eric Carlson,
top,
I mean.
Top guys, yeah.
So, I mean, eight and a quarter for him, I guess, is terrible. But he's not, like, I don't know. He's never been that guy for Arizona. I don't think they're like the guy that changes your chances of winning a Stanley Cup. Good productive player, but for what the Bruins are looking for.
And it's a big gamble, man. If he's big not gamble. Good, if he's not good and he doesn't have a resurgence under Bruce Cassidy's system, man, that's a bad contract. That's now a bad contract on your books for 7 years. And so that part of it's tough, I think. And because you look at his numbers, the point totals have been down. The power play production's been down. He doesn't shoot the puck nearly as much as he used to, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. So everything.
Isn't that what he's good for?
Yeah. So you have to look at it and you have to say, okay, is this what he is now? Or is this sort of a byproduct of playing under that system in Arizona where offense goes to die for some reason. But if you're wrong and it's just that's what he is now, again, that's an albatross. That sucks to have that on your books for almost a decade. It's immovable. You can't do anything with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if they're gonna trade for an expensive I'd rather they get, like, Chris Letang if they're going to get, like, an older, expensive defenseman, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would love it if they could find, and listen, I'm asking them to find a needle in a haystack here. I want them to find a Jacob Slavin type who is under the radar, but elite. You know what I mean? And Ekman Larson, he might be good in a new system, but I want a guy that makes a little bit less money, is a little bit younger, and the contract is more team friendly. And I say this knowing that I'm looking for a unicorn.
What about like Matt Dumba?
But that's sort of what you want, is you want that kind of guy. You want to have the value before it's top of the market value. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's hard for the Bruins to get. And I know that the Hurricanes are interested in Jake DeBrusk. But I know that's not going to get you Jacob Slavin. You know what I mean? Like that.
No.
You're going to get probably, I would say that Brett Pesce is probably the best you can do from Carolina's blue line if you made a trade involving Jake DeBrusk.
I mean, what if it was like DeBrusk, Vaakanainen, and a draft pick or something? Is that now we're getting to be too much for Slavin?
Yeah, I think.
Or like, even like Dumba?
I think now it's getting a little crazy. You know what I mean? So from everything that I've heard and everything we've read and seen online, it seems like they're involved in everything. But at a certain point, you need to find your focus. You know what I mean? You need to find, okay, what's number one for you? What is the top priority because it's easy to have your fingers in 10 pies, but which one are you going to eat at the end of the day? You know, I think that's where they kind of are. They figure out where they're going to go.
That was gross. That made me queasy.
I know.
Stop putting these images in my mind. Ugh.
No. Old 10 pies, Anderson, baby.
This one's filled with garbage and mayonnaise.
This one's Huckleberry. What even is that?
Is that fertilizer? What the hell? Yes, but it has vanilla.
Yeah, this one is deep dish, and it's 1,000 degrees.
What is this green paste?
I don't know what they're going to do, man. It just feels like they're in on everything, and it's like, all right, that's cool, but are you going to close? Can you close, please?
I know. And then they're going to close, and it's going to be like it's going to be the Thornton trade all over again.
Yeah. That or they're going to –
Bobby McMuffin.
That's like they're going to do the thing on July October 9th now, not July 1, where they say, we had a lot of good conversations, but we got this minor league player who was with Newark last year, and we got this guy from the ECHL. He plays for the Jacksonville Ice Rockets or whatever they're called.
We got him. We pulled him out of Cohasset. There was a local rink. We sent the scout, and he really liked his jam, and I think he's going to be a good addition to our hockey club.
Yeah, I mean, it's
what about the kid they drafted today? It was today. What's his, Mason Lowry or Lowry? I don't know how you pronounce that name.
It's Lowry. So Lowry, like low-rise jeans, baby.
Lowry.
He's 6'4". He's an overager in the USHL.
Please explain for the people what that means. I didn't even know. I didn't know this term.
He was older than his competition last year, so he was going against a lot of younger teenagers. While he is an older teenager, he's 19 years old. He's going to play in the USHL again this season.
And why is that though? Why is he? Why is he coming in a year older? Is that just how it? That's just how it shook out.
Oh, he's just been there for
with his kindergarten class or whatever, and all the way up to.
No, you have options in terms of when you can, you know, you can play the USHL and then go to college or you know, whatever you want to do from there. He's just opted for that path. You know, like Curtis Hall, for example, Bruins prospect, played for the Youngstown Phantoms. And then he went to Yale.
Thanks, Pierre.
So he's doing his college hockey now after doing a little bit of time in the USHL. So it's a different path for different guys. But he's been there. He's 6'4", but people tell me he's 6'5", so he might be even bigger than that. But people think they're getting, the people are knocking it because of where he was ranked. But the people who have seen him, actually seen him play in the USHL and gone against him, have said that he's a good player. Talking to one person who went against him and trains with him, said that. His long stick, really, really good defensively. He's hard to get around, and he has a ton of skill too. And he thinks the game really well. And he thinks that this pick is going to pay off for the Bruins.
He compared it to Colton Parayko, right? That sounds exactly like Colton Parayko.
Yeah, that's sort of the comp that he's getting.
I mean, if they got Parayko, that would be amazing.
That'd be beautiful. And so we'll see what happens here. And this speaks to a frustration that I have with the NHL draft and with drafts in general. We've talked about this, I think, with the NFL, is that, you know, nobody's heard of the guy, but they know they hate him and they know he sucks, you know? And it's just like,
wasn't in my notes, therefore he sucks.
Exactly. And so I've always hated that, you know, like we go back to, you know, David Pastrnak was taken 25th or 24th overall. And a lot of teams passed on him. And he's the best player.
I was going to say, isn't he now the best player? Because that was like the Nico Hisch year. Was it that year?
No,
who was number one in that draft?
I don't know who was number one. It might have been Dreisaitl, I think. Well, Dreisaitl was in that draft. I don't know if he was one or two or however.
I think he was three or four or something. I'm trying to remember. I don't care. But, yeah, Pastrnak was like really the best player from that draft right now. Because, I mean, Pastrnak's like, I don't know how you'd rank him among all the players, but he's up there.
Exactly, and so that's an example of a player that's slipped, or at the time was, I think, considered a reach by many because people didn't know a lot about him. Because he was injured that year in Sweden, he missed a lot of time, so people didn't get to see how good he really was. But then we go back to 2015. Now in 2015, we talk about, you know, how they got Zboril, DeBrusque, and Sinisian back to back to back. Now what people forget when they talk about this draft is that out of those three picks, Zboril was considered the safest. He was considered the easiest pick. Here we are, 2020, and we've seen him for, I think, one NHL game. Yeah. And we don't know if he's going to be anything at the NHL level. So
Sinisian was the one who was like not on anyone's board, and they're like, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah, exactly. So I just think that if you determine a player's career value and career ceiling on day one after not knowing much about him, I think you're crazy. And so, hey, listen, he might suck. He might be really good, though. So we're going to have to wait and see. But based on the people who've actually seen him play and not just gone against him, you know, on the ice, not just watched him in a game or seen film, they think that he's a good player. They think it's going to be a good pick for them. So yeah. I trust them more than I trust myself or what a list says about him. You know what I mean? So
yeah, and that's, your point basically is that someone was going to take Zboril like in, up there in the first round or, you know. So like someone was going to have be subject to the, like they whiffed on the pick or whatever. Just not as intense as it is here because we have all we've lost our minds in Boston. But it's been 5 years. It feels like forever when the guy hasn't played. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I guess you would hope he would be able to crack the top six. But
yeah,
well, I mean, not, it's 5 years. It takes that long for most guys to get to their to even approach their ceiling.
Yeah,
but McAvoy is still a couple years away.
To be clear, I'm talking about Lowry right now. Is that
yeah.
People are already saying he sucks, but if he's drawing comparisons to Colton Parayko, well, let's consider that Colton Parayko is a third round draft pick, and he was in the same third round that also featured Shane Gostisbehere, Adam Pellick, Matt Grizzlick, and Esa Lindell. You got some good defensemen. You don't have to like these defensemen. I don't think, you know, that you have to get them, like, I just think it's subjective. I really do.
Are these rankings even accurate? Is there data to show, like, that these elite prospect rankings or whatever it's called?
No, I mean, just think that.
Does that even matter? Do those things even matter? Because, like, I saw everyone kept throwing out, like, this site had him at, 138 overall or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, is that just one person's opinion? Do these rankings like turn out to be correct? I don't even know.
I'm not sure what every website's, you know, process is for their own rankings.
This is what I hate about the draft. This is what I hate about analyzing any draft, any sport. It's like, oh, I didn't have him in my rankings. This guy wasn't in my top 600. It's like, you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know. Especially in the NHL, guys, good players, like stars get drafted in the second, third, fourth round all the time.
Yeah, and I
mean like it's really a crapshoot, I think.
And no disrespect to Corey Prondon from The Athletic, who does a good job, but you know people were saying that he had him seventh round in his mock draft, and it's like, all right, well I'm sure Corey's been wrong before. We've all been wrong before. I thought that the Bruins gave up too much for Charlie Coyle.
Right, I'm not saying you're a piece of shit for making rankings, but like, I just choose not to like say like, oh that was good, this is bad. Like none at the end of the day, none of us really know.
And we're not going to know for about 2 to 3 years, you know, at the very earliest. That's
hockey's like
know
baseball. Guys don't contribute right away usually.
Yeah, exactly. So I think
pushing out a defenseman.
Listen, I'll trust that the Bruins have seen more of this guy than anyone on Twitter has. You know, so I'll take their word for it. And Sweeney's going to talk today. We'll see what he says. But also, the pick that I like for them was 89th overall. Trevor Kuntar from New York to go into Boston College. I had multiple people reach out to me and say that this is a great pick for the Bruins. Sort of similar to what happened when they took Jacob Lacko a few years ago. People were reaching out to me immediately saying, this is great value for them. This is a good pick. Mm. And we're seeing now the hype train with Lacko. He's looked pretty good in his preseasons here in Boston. So they like this guy a lot. The people I've talked to say he can play center and wing. He's a smart player. He's physical. He gives you everything that you want to see. He competes hard, and he has a knack for some clutch goals.
Hey, but you can't. He's not going to score 50 goals, Ty. So this guy's going to suck, and you're an asshole for thinking he's going to contribute anything.
The comp that I heard is Jordan Martinook from the Hurricanes. Which
I would take Jordan Martinook.
If you get that in the third round, I'll take it. You know, I think that people, they always want top six talent, but if you can get a steady third line or second line fill in, I think you'll take that. And you look at Kuntar's year with the Youngstown Phantoms. This past year, he was their leading goal scorer, hit the third most goals in the USHL. He had the 10th most points in the USHL. He's going to BC. He's going to play under Jerry York. The Bruins can keep tabs on him because he's playing for Boston College. They love doing that.
Isn't that why they look at so many homegrown kids?
Yeah, it's a big reason why. And they love being able to, you know, hit up a player's game and check in with him, see how he's doing, see how he's feeling. They love bringing them to the Garden and showing them what it's like to play, you know, in front of that crowd. I can't tell you how many times that they've brought guys, you know, you'll be in the elevator going up to the press box and hey, there's one of their prospects from BU or BC over the years, you know, that I've covered the team where that's been the case. They love doing that. So this is another example of that. And he has NHL bloodlines. His father, Les, was a goalie for the Canadiens for a cup of coffee back in 94, was the first goaltender for the Worcester Ice Cats, the now defunct Worcester Ice Cats.
Fun.
Yeah, so again, a son of a pro who understands the game, understands what it takes, the work ethic, and another overager. Wasn't drafted last year, was draft eligible, but they, you know, they like the motivation factor that he came to the game with this year, and I think they like him a lot. And again, based on what I've been told, they should like him. Seems like they're kind of guy.
Is it sort of like a Kyle Duggar situation where they look at the guy's competition and think like he's not as good as he might look because of who he's playing against with these overager players?
Yeah,
I'm just trying to figure out, understand why that these guys aren't as valued.
I think it's similar to that, but it's also they look for a lot of guys that are sort of, I think, buried on really good teams. You know, you go back to John Beecher last year. Beecher, people consider it a reach. But I think that if he was playing in a proper role and not on a stacked team, he was on the U.S. developmental team, a stacked team, you know, and a good year for American centers. He was logging bottom 6 minutes. He wasn't getting power play time. You know, he wasn't getting this. And so I think with these kids, it's the opportunities open up, right, over time. And what do you do with that opportunity? And I think that's more important to the Bruins versus you know, the sort of the, okay, well, did you get the top 6 minutes right away? Did you get the top pairing minutes right away?
I think we're just impatient.
Yeah,
we're just impatient.
And listen, rightfully so to a degree, the NHL gets younger every year, but you get younger with first round picks, not with second and third round picks. I mean, these are projects. These are multi-year efforts. So I don't hate these picks. After talking to people who've seen them, more than you or I or anyone on Twitter, I think these picks make sense for the Bruins.
Doesn't matter what we're seeing for people on Twitter. It doesn't matter what they're seeing. They're going to be someone's going to be mad.
Yeah, no,
and that's going to ruin our day. That's just how it goes. 100%. I hate my brain.
I think Brian Ralston's kid just got drafted, by the way. I'm pretty sure that just happened.
Oh no, Brian Ralston Jr. No, God, I'm a fossil.
Yeah,
I remember the day. I still remember watching Harry Sinden talk about. Was it Harry Sinden? Yeah, talk about trading Ray Bourque to Colorado. Mm-hmm. And the day after it was the same day that they got killed, I think, by the Flyers. And I think Dale Arnold was still doing the games for Nesson, and it was just like complete silence. Nobody on the broadcast even said anything, like, while the game was going on, like, in the final minute. Mm-hmm. It was just the most depressing thing, because, like, everyone knew at that point that Bourque was about to get traded.
Oh, yeah.
But that reason I brought it up is because they got Brian Ralston in return.
That's right. He was part
and,
of that.
And he actually turned out to be pretty return. Good. Yeah.
And, you know, he got drafted by the
New Jersey Devils?
No, the
Colorado Avalanche.
His kid got drafted by the
Avalanche.
It all comes full circle, baby.
Ah, nice. So now he will be coming to the Bruins in a couple of years for Charlie McAvoy.
And then he will come back when he is 40 years old and actually be kind of good. That 2012 Brian Rolston revival remains one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in my entire life.
Did he play for Columbus or something?
He was with the Islanders and he got traded to the Bruins. And he was so good. He was ridiculous down the stretch for the Bruins that year. And it made no sense.
Oh, I'm thinking of Brian Gionta. Didn't he also have a 40-goal season out of nowhere last year at age 38?
Gionta?
Yeah. Or maybe I'm thinking of Ralston.
No,
I get those two mixed up.
Yeah, no, Ralston, he came back here in 2012 at the deadline with Mike Motto. And everyone's like, look at these old
Mike
guys.
Mike Motto, holy shit, that was something.
And they were actually kind of good. Pretty weird.
Oh, good times. Yeah, so, I mean, like, if the Bruins were to make, like, a big move, like, out of the ones that have been rumored, which one do you want?
The most?
If they could only make one of these moves, of something that's, like, been, like, talked about or thought about.
It hasn't been talked about yet.
I said what's been talked about!
No, but it kind of has, but not, like, full-on Bruins and these guys are talking. I still want Kyle Palmieri. I still think he's the best fit for that.
Oh, yeah, no, he's on the list. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that he's what they need. I mean, he's averaged 26 goals over the last 4 years. He's like captain material. Like, he's a really good locker room presence.
He would solve your top six problem, I think. Or at least have a very good chance of that.
He really would. And
but they got to trade for him?
They'd have to trade for him, which I would want to do. I still think that he's the best option available. I think that Toffoli is a good option too, but I like Palmieri a little bit more than I like Tyler Toffoli at this point in his career. So that's who I'd want. I mean, see if they're willing to pay the price, if they can pay the price. I know it was a pretty tall ask back in February, but we'll see this time around. I think that'd be a good get for them.
I think so too. If they did something like Palmieri and Saad or Toffoli and Saad or like a combination of those moves, I would be on board. Mm-hmm. I'd say, all right, now we're cooking. As long as they're not peeling off the main roster, and the younger guys get a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Maybe it pushes a guy like Anders Bjork to play better. I don't know.
Yeah,
you could push Kasha down to like the third line or something. If they're going to hold on to him,
slotted into their right place.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like there's no more. All right, well, let's see if this guy can be a top six player. You know, it's like no. These are top six players. They will go here. The third liner that you've tried to say is a top line player will go in the third line, and everyone's happy. You know, it's sort of the proper slotting for all these guys, which would really alleviate a lot of their problems.
Yeah. I think so. I hope they do it. I mean, I'm just sick of what we talked about before, but I'm sick of putting, Band-Aid on a bullet wound. You know, the minor moves, the little thing, the little tinkering here and there on the margins. Let's do something nice and juicy. I'm hungry for it.
I mean, if you're going to give this group one final real chance.
This is like that scene in Spotlight when they're just about ready to report on the Catholic Church abuse scandal and, like, the editor's like, I don't know. We gotta wait till it's time. And then Mark Ruffalo goes, it's time! It's time! Let's do it! For God's sake!
And then he becomes
That's how I feel right now. Not that I'm comparing the Bruins to, but yeah. It's like, it's time. We gotta do something big. We gotta make the move.
I think it is. It is, because, again, we've talked about this again and again and again, but how many more chances do you actually have with this group? I think you're already trying to extend a closed window, so go in, try it, do something real, and let's go. Like, let's stop wasting time with these, again, what you said, these Band-Aids on a bullet hole. Like, let's go.
We're bleeding.
I know.
It's everywhere.
Bleeding out.
All right. How many more picks until the Bruins? I mean, you don't have to give them the exact number. Is it still a while before they make another? Because it's still the – do they not have a fourth rounder? Is it 5, 6, 7?
Yeah, they're in the fifth round right now. They're about 10 picks away. One of the guys I wanted them to get is gone. Damn it.
Are they just dragging this thing out? Because it's on TV and there's nothing else going on?
No. It's just way slower. The communication process is slower.
True, yeah. Everyone's on Zoom or whatever.
It's so much easier when everyone is on the same, floor. yeah. like they typically are, but that's not happening.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
I've had a lot of time to look at hockey stuff today because our football team is a mess. Our football team is dying.
Yeah, do you have corona? Has that happened to you?
I think I'm convinced I had it back in late January.
Oh.
Ooh. I remember, I think I still have like the Slack combo where I message you guys like, guys, this is as sick as I have felt in a long time. And this is like the last week of January. And this is when coronavirus was popping off in China, but mm-hmm. hadn't become the global crisis that it is today. Mm-hmm. I felt like the worst flu ever. So it might have been the flu, but like at that now with everything that's happened and like the Biogen conference and all that, I'm almost convinced I had coronavirus because I mean Chelsea turned out to be one of the hardest hit areas of the stomping grounds of Ty Anderson. Chelsea mm-hmm. was like the worst in the state. And right. I go to the Market Basket in Chelsea like all the time. So I might have just dipped right into the Petri dish back when the thing was just getting started, you know?
You absolutely did. You absolutely did.
And I don't know, I may or may not have the antibodies. I mean, the science has been inconsistent on that thing.
Yeah.
But I was really sick. I'm convinced I had Rona back then, but I mean, yeah, the NFL is trying to move along with the season, and I think that they're still going to do it. But I'm getting scared. Everyone's getting scared, and I understand. I try to calm down the freakouts on Twitter and all that. It's like, guys, they're not going to cancel the season. But I mean, just speaking to the reality of it, that the NFL is not going to call everything off. But I mean, it's getting squirrely out there.
Yeah, I mean, this is what happens though when you try to play through a virus that takes 4 or 5 days to actually show up. That's the
most concerning part.
Yeah.
The Patriots might have had things start to pop up days after. That's what happened with the Titans. So not that I'm an expert on the science of it, but I'm just looking at what happened.
No, and we talked about this we have a text chain with me, you, and Alex, the digital content team. We have a group text, and I think I mentioned, I said, you know, every doctor is saying this game shouldn't be happening right now, which is a little bit concerning to me, and we're going to see what happens here, but I do think that we're still learning more about this virus as the day goes, as the days go on here. And so the NFL being the NFL and thinking, no, we got it. I mean, it's a slap in the face to intelligence and to the scientific research to think you have all the answers, especially when one of your teams is currently in the middle of fighting this thing. It's a real son of a bitch to fight, as we're all realizing. And so it was arrogant. And it was stupid to try to play this game, in my opinion. And you'll never convince me that this game would have gone on as scheduled had it been Patrick Mahomes who tested positive for the coronavirus and not Cam Newton. I'm not claiming bias. I'm just saying they'd understand the importance of not playing that game, given the importance of that player and that team. And now here we are, hoping that they don't contract the virus like the Patriots are right now.
It's sort of like the inverse of why they wouldn't take a star quarterback off the field if he looked like he had a concussion. They would pretend, act like it's not happening. But I don't know if they have all the answers. They think they're scientists or anything. I just think that they just prioritize their product over the virus mm-hmm. containing the spread of it or what have you. And they'll just, we're going to put our protocols in place and you better follow them. And I mean, it's not like we were having positive tests. I mean, it was low. It was like, you know, three guys, four guys out of thousands of people across the league getting tested. Like, it's not like the NFL wasn't like the NHL where they had zero positive tests. You know, it's just true. It's just getting a little freaky that we have star players catching the virus and games being postponed. And obviously the whole outbreak with the Titans is scary. And you're like, I'm just holding my breath, hoping that the same thing isn't about to happen in Foxborough. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you just put that team in a big metal tube. and flew them to Kansas City and back. I mean, I don't know. I'm convinced that Robert Kraft and Clark Hunt wanted the game to happen, because, I mean, if they really didn't want it to happen, it wouldn't have happened, I don't think. I don't necessarily disagree on the Mahomes conspiracy theory, though. You know,
well, my other
the face of the NFL catches COVID-19, you might shut everything down.
The other conspiracy theory I have is that one of the reasons, to your point, that they forged on with this game is because they know week 4 exists. Week 17, week 18, week 13 may not exist, might not happen.
Yeah, but aren't they teetering now? They're sort of teetering between, like, if whether, like, they should pause the season for a couple weeks now and push everything back, or they're running the risk of everything getting so bad that they have to cancel it altogether. That's sort of like the line I feel like we're getting closer to, which is very concerning.
Which I think is why they played on Monday. I think that's why they did, because they need to get the ratings while they can, you know?
Are they just accepting that they're going to run this season into the ground then? There's that, like, that's... We're just going to go as long as we can, and we'll call it off in week 14 if we have to or something.
Yeah, we'll take a 2-month pause and come back and be like the NHL. You know, be like the NBA and the NHL, where you have a bubble playoff or whatever it is, you know, which is just – I don't know how – I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know how a bubble NFL would have worked, but I'll tell you what.
You got way more moving parts with the size of the rosters.
Yeah, but the other part of it, though, that's a little frustrating for me as an NFL fan, is that they didn't even look at their options. They just went, we're going to do this. And that's where I'm talking about sort of the arrogance of the NFL, of just saying, we're going to get through this. They didn't even consider other options besides playing through it in home stadiums. Everyone's traveling. You know, no bubble.
It's comical how they did the draft. They almost like they were acting like, no, it's not happening. Just stay the course.
Yeah.
And we're all like the old lady on the farm and Billy Madison. Is anybody listening to me? It's like, no, we're just going to forge ahead because we're the NFL. You're going to watch. F you. You suck. We know that you're going to watch no matter what. And we are watching. It's been an awesome season so far.
It has been.
It's going to really suck if this season gets, like, totally upended. But I don't know. I just feel like at this point they're not going to call it off. They're just going to move. They're just going to work with what they got. They're going to tighten the restrictions. And this is why we expanded rosters and practice squads, and why we modified the IR rules, because we're not going to call off the season or even pause it because a handful of guys tested positive. And, you know, it's getting high on the Titans. So, like, obviously teams have to tighten things up and be more careful. And it sounds like Stephon Gilmore is shocked that he has COVID, which my conspiracy theory is that Cam Newton gave it to him. Because Cam Newton, with his tweet, I hate reading into cryptic tweets. I hate Twitter. But Cam Newton's tweet was just like, wear a mask, keep your distance, which is – sort of like I read into that as like I learned my lesson. I screwed up at some point, and I got careless, and now I have the virus, and so now I'm gonna be more careful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, and look, I get it. He has a 99% chance of surviving. I get it, but like that's all about stopping the spread. It's like, don't we want the stupid virus to go away? We want to keep watching sports, and I feel like don't fans eventually want to go back? Don't we want to go back to these games? They're not gonna let it happen.
I would love to go back to an NFL game. I would love to sit in on a live sporting event from somewhere beyond my couch.
Right. It's weird up there. It's weird in the press box right now.
Oh, I can imagine. I that's why I told you when we were doing
it. But I still recommend it. The measures at Gillette, from my experience, have been great.
No,
very tight, very strict.
No interest in covering a game that does not have fans. That is of no interest to me.
It is
especially in that press box. And this is a little inside media here. I know. If you don't like the media, you probably hate
it. I don't care. I'm not trying to complain. I feel very fortunate to be able to go enter that stadium.
But for me personally, I can cover an NHL game with no fans. I cannot cover an NFL game with no fans. The biggest reason being that the Gillette press box is closed air. So it's not, you can't really, like, if people.
It's
like,
the library. It's the Foxborough Library.
If I have a conversation with you, everyone can hear because no one is talking.
And it's weird with masks, and every reporter has a pane of glass between each person.
Yeah, why do that when I can sit at home on my couch eating candy and not wearing pants and have the same view, if not a better view, of the game. This is a real thing, especially if everything's Zoom, right? You're still doing post-game Zoom.
Well, they are putting a delicious cheesecake in the box lunch that they provide for all the reporters.
Oh, are they really? I'm a big fan of cheesecake.
The food has been top-notch for like what the situation is. It's like they're going above and beyond.
Of peach.
The whole thing's great. I'm not complaining about it. It is just unusual, shitty. And it's different. It is the weirdest part is that it's silent up there, and you can't hear what's going on outside on the field. So, like, yeah. No matter what the play is, whether it's a big play, small play, there's just no reaction. There's mm-hmm. no crowd to hear. There's no silence. It's just silence. It's weird. Mm-hmm. It's like you're deaf and watching a game, you know, or watching a game on mute with nothing going on, hearing nothing around you, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd like that. I mean, with hockey, I can at least hear the blades and I can hear the, you know, the on-ice banter. With football, you get that pane of glass in front of you. You can't do anything. Don't want to.
What a weird season! It's the NFL. They will play through it. They would play through that scene in The Dark Knight Rises when Bane blows up the football field and Hines Ward runs down the field and the whole thing falls out from under him, and then everyone on the field dies except the one guy, and it's like, what the hell happened? There's a giant crater. They mm-hmm. would play through that.
It's a good idea.
It all just comes out in a Bane mask. Oh, there's a 10-foot patch of grass over there. You must play on it.
Belichick's wearing the Bane mask.
The virus can't contain me. The virus was born in me.
It's true.
I wouldn't be surprised at all.
I don't know, man. We're never gonna get out of this. I'm like pretty sure we're never gonna get out. I'm like the more like I'm the longer we're in this, the more I'm like, this is just life now. This is what it is. Goodbye sports. Goodbye crowds.
It's crazy.
Like
now, we have to. I don't know, man. There has to be a middle ground between everybody lock yourself in your bunker forever, mm-hmm. and the virus is fake. Don't do anything. You know, mm-hmm. it's funny because Gilmore says he followed every protocol. I assume he was like wearing a mask everywhere, and you know, the masks and distancing wasn't burning enough. I guess I don't know.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I, you know, I know it's.
It's not deadly for nearly everybody. Like most people are okay, and like the test positive rate is one below 1%, and the deaths are down. I get all that.
And I understand why.
But it's like I want the thing to. I want it to stop.
Yeah, and I understand it's a polarizing topic for a lot of people, and you know that part of it is what it is. For me, it's frustrating though, and. When I see that, you know, I think most people are trying, they're trying their best to take precautions. And then you have things like what's happening with LSU, which their football games, they're getting rid of the CDC guidelines for fans that are trying to go, and they're going to reopen liquor sales. You know, there was that report today, the Miami Dolphins have been given the go ahead to have full 65,000 people in attendance for their games, and it's like, you know, I get it. I want to be that too. But if it's not going to be contained and it's going to set us back, it's like, all right, well, what are we doing here? Are we ever going to get out of this? So the whole thing is just it's an absolute nightmare. But it's frustrating when you see that not every league and every arena is on the same page. And in my opinion, that's only going to create more. You know, more bullshit that we're going to be stuck in, you know, for
yeah.
You know, now we add 60 days onto it, you know.
What can you do about teenagers and college kids, though? Like those kids are going to be, they're going to be the ones throwing all these parties that are indoors and they're all breathing the same air and spitting on each other and you know, doing God knows what else to each other mm-hmm. for hours on end. And like there's, and they know, yeah. And they, Jesus. Hey, cut that out. Yeah. Cut that part out.
Don't cut it out. Keep it in. It's funny. I just thought about Stephen A. Smith. He's like, oh, ass. Always ass.
I wasn't, that is what I was talking about. I mean, that is what I was talking about. I wasn't going to actually go there. You just straight up said it.
Yeah. Why not?
I like it.
On the clock,
I like it. I think I know what ties into now. But the college kids, they're just asking for outbreaks. That's where outbreaks are going to keep happening, and they have happened. Mm-hmm. They're all inside breathing the same air for hours on end, and they know that it's likely even if I get the Rona, I'll survive anyway. And what they're not thinking about is how much they're going to spread it to other people or people that might be vulnerable, less or like more vulnerable than them. The Bruins have drafted Mason Langenbrunner.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Ray to Jamie?
I would imagine so. It's not a very common last name. But he is from Minnesota. So, again, I'm going to assume that he is – yes, he is his son. And do you know where he's going to be playing?
Isn't Langenbrunner still working for the Bruins?
He is working for the Bruins.
Is he like a prominent scout?
He is.
They just drafted his kid?
He is their director of player development. I believe that's his role now.
And he's developing his kid?
Yes.
Now? Wow. Yes. That's interesting. I love Jamie Langenbrunner because I was a Dallas Stars guy back in the late 90s, early 2000s.
That's right, you were.
I hope he turns out to be close to what his dad was.
Yeah. That's a weird pick because it's his son, and I gotta find.
That's why I'm thinking. I'm like, that's, you know, it's a little, seems a little odd.
I gotta figure out his exact role with the Bruins now because it's gonna bother me. He is a player development coordinator. That's what it is. Yeah, so.
That pick was absolute ass. Hashtag nepotism.
Yeah, I don't know much about him, obviously. You rarely do at this point. You know, this part of the draft, it's a lot of, oh, yeah, okay, I heard of him. You know, like there are guys that are still kicking around that you're curious about. But yeah, Mason, he's a son of Jamie. He is a defenseman and he is a Harvard commit. So again, another guy who is going to be in their backyard.
He's going to be in his dad's backyard a lot. Literally.
Yeah. He's going to be living at home. Harvard is online only right now.
They set up a nice race car bed for him. He's going to get to have snacks every night. Movie night is Thursday at the Langenbrunner household.
So this is interesting to me because he's a Harvard commit. He's 6'2". He's a defenseman. It seems like last year he just played in tournaments. I'm looking at his Elite Prospects page now. Sorry. I know this is not good audio. He plays
for Eden. I'm going to cut this out. I'm going to leave in ass eating, but I'm going to cut this part out.
Yeah, that makes sense. He played high school hockey in Minnesota last year, 25 games, 5 goals, 19 points. He's going to Harvard next year. So not this year. Obviously, Harvard canceled all their athletics this season. So we'll see. We'll see how that plays out. But yeah, they are drafting the son of their player development coordinator. So we will see how. Again, that's just it's not the first time they've done this. It's not the first time they've done this. They drafted Matthew Benning, who is Jim Benning, who was their assistant GM at the time. They drafted his kid or his nephew. It wasn't his kid, it was his nephew. So they've done this before. We'll see. Interesting move, though.
Not going to look good if he doesn't turn out to be a real player in the organization. I know it's not a high pick, so I mean, who cares? But you know, they draft one of the top scouting guys' kids. He better pin out. Because what if he turns out to be like? What if he doesn't have the right character or something? I'm not questioning his character as a person, but it's like if anyone should know of what this kid's potential is, it's his friggin' dad.
It's gonna be so awkward if they trade him. Are you kidding me? Like, what if they're like, hey, we gotta trade you?
Ryan Donato, I thought was bad enough when they had him and just like they just his dad used to be on the team in the 90s. I thought that was bad enough. I was like, how are they gonna trade this kid now?
Yeah, and he was.
I mean, they did it. They did it for the Weymouth kid, but
yeah, this is.
That was a funny tweet. I remember someone pointed out that who was it? It said Chris Wagner's from Wellesley. Wasn't that like an actual team or something?
Didn't the NHL said it?
The NHL, yeah.
Their official Twitter account said it, and it was like
oh no, oh jeez.
I'm like, you guys have no idea what's coming for you right now.
Wellesley.
Yeah, can you imagine Chris Wagner being from Wellesley? Like, just knowing his demeanor and like his on ice persona that he's from Wellesley.
That's where I live, Wellesley.
Is it really?
Get this ass out of my town.
Is there a Felger's from you?
I don't know if he's – no, he's not from – he's from Wisconsin. Yeah, but he's – no, I think he lives at Wellesley now.
He's lived there, yeah. Yeah. And this is so funny that the Bruins keep doing this. Like, this is, like, unbelievable that they keep doing this. It's like they had Donato. They had a Benning. They drafted the guy whose dad is part of the ice crew. They drafted Tom Fitzgerald's kid. They just keep doing this. This is like a weird thing. This is like a weird. It's a fetish. They have a fetish for the children of their former players and employees.
I mean, could Patrice Bergeron get a stick in his kid's hands real quick?
Mason?
Can he pop out a couple more kids?
Zach is Zach.
Could Patrice Bergeron get his wife to have a couple more kids? I mean, that they're going to keep drafting kids of people on the team.
Zach,
in the organization.
I think Zach is already skating. I think I've seen him at Warrior skating.
Oh, thank God. Zach Bergeron is absolutely going to be a Bruins draft pick in 2038 or whatever.
Yeah, when his dad is the GM of the team. That's how it's going to happen. They're going to extend it beyond just the realm of
Oh, my God.
It's going to be Inception and family of Inception. It's going to be insane. Yeah.
Oh,
we'll
man.
See. That's an interesting pick. They better hope he's good or they're going to
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. The kid better be good.
It's so weird. It's so weird. Yeah.
It's like we walk into the house and get out when we go to the Bruins house. It's like they feel like everyone's lobotomized. Yes. We're all from the same family. Families win the Stanley Cups.
It's unbelievable. I can't. I love it. I love it. I love it because I love chaos, and this is chaos.
They're going to take Jamie Langenbrenner's brain out and put it in the head of his kid.
Well, let's to your point, let's talk about this. Langenbrenner was a pretty good player, so maybe if that happens, I'll be happy. I don't know about you, but I know you, Dallas Stars fanboy. You're already happy about
it. I mean, the pants might be coming off in a few years. That's all I'm gonna say to make a callback. I don't know, another kid named Mason too. I don't know how I feel about that.
Mason's a very popular.
What are the odds? What are the odds that they draft two guys named Mason and they're both good? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't like those odds.
I'm trying to remember what the Langenbrenner connection is for the Bruins. I don't remember why he came over, like, to work for the team. I don't think he ever played. Like, no, he never played.
Didn't Don Sweeney play for the Stars, or they probably didn't, not at the same time as Langenbrenner?
That's actually a really good point. That is a good question.
I feel like he probably was gone before Langenbrenner. I don't know for sure. That's the only possible connection I could think of for why he ended up here.
Yeah, that is a really good question. I'm not sure because I know Sweeney did play there, but I think it was like wasn't the final year of his career he played there? Like So I don't know. Yeah, that. I'm looking at HockeyDB, and it doesn't appear that they were on the Stars at the same time.
No. I don't know. He just likes it here.
Yeah, why
apparently
not?
So do his kids.
Well, that's
all
like,
right. Get your draft tweet ready for Brian Ralston's kid when the Bruins are ready to take him.
Yeah. Well, okay. Nope. I just made the connection in my head. Jay Pandolfo is on the Bruins staff, and Jay Pandolfo was teammates at Langenbrenner in New Jersey. So maybe that's how that happened. Look at that. Connecting the dots.
Yeah, he hurt my broke my heart as a Stars fan when he went over to the stinking New Jersey Devils. Mm. 2000 finals were painful.
You know who else works for the Bruins? Is Mike Dunham. The old goaltender for the Predators back in the day.
Yes.
Yeah, he works he's like their goaltending consultant or something like that. I don't know. He works with the prospects down in Providence and I think down in Atlanta with their ECHL team is.
He's got some work to do now since it looked like Tuukka Rask era might be over.
It's very weird that we're at the age now where all these players that we grew up watching are now coaches and GMs.
It's gross. It is gross. And their kids are getting drafted by them.
Yeah.
It's just it's getting weird out there, man. It's especially, I think it'll be officially over for us when like Sidney Crosby's coaching or Jonathan Taves is a coach.
Right. Right.
When they come on and their heads are like 3 inches wider than when they used to be. And they got all this white hair and it's like, oh my God, I used to watch you when you were a thoroughbred winning Stanley Cups. This is getting weird.
Right.
NBA too. Like guys look like you got like Steve Nash being a coach and, yeah. It is funny how you start to notice that like cycle in sports. Like the first time that starts to happen, it's really like it really is like one of the number one like moments of a person's life when they realize how old they're getting.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a sports fan,
yeah, and that's like Gabe Kapler's a manager, Rocco Baldelli's a manager. I mean, it's just odd.
Yeah.
It's just odd times.
It's gonna be weird when some of these movie stars start dropping, like Tom Hanks and like right. Tom Cruise dies. And, gonna be weird.
This took a weird turn.
You know, it's the circle of life, you know.
Yeah.
COVID-19 is here to remind us of mortality.
Ain't that the truth?
Except the NFL. I guess the NFL is just invincible. They're just gonna withstand everything, and the shield is what matters.
Mm-hmm.
The shield is gonna shield everybody from the Rona.
Goodell will live forever, never retire.
Yeah, inject him with some kind of weird blood. You should inject me with the blood of the youths. Yeah, I don't know.
That sounds about right.
The NFL would play through the nuclear winter. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
LA could look like that scene in Terminator 2 where Sarah Connor gets blown up into a skeleton and the city burns to ash. And they would still get the Rams and Browns going on Fox, you know. Joe Buck's sitting there with like a wind blowing in his face, fire all around him, ash in his eyes. Ass is caught. Touchdown.
It's that viral tweet come to life where it's a nuclear winter and it's Joe Buck. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Like, wait, what? This is a real thing?
There's a viral tweet where it's like Joe Buck as the sun is expanding and eating the earth as a whole. And it's just Joe Buck voice. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I'm just thinking about that. I love it. Yeah. Don't you love when you just think about something and start laughing? I got to look that up now. I don't know how to find that. That's the funny thing with Twitter is that like it's impossible to like find something that you saw in the past.
That was funny
because there's no connection between like the text and the video. It's so hard to find because you can't like search for like Joe Buck's sun blowing up and find it, you know?
Yeah. I already found it. My favorite viral tweet that I always have to Google is the one of the person saying, hell yeah, Benihana up in this bitch. And it's just a bunch of loose vegetables on like an oven. It's so funny. I'm going to send it to you as well. Send everything to me. The tweet is Joe Buck. Welcome to the top of the 47th. Sun rises. Sun keeps getting bigger. Yes. World engulfed by flames. Buck. Oh, God. Yes.
Oh, my God. You got to send that to me. I had a good viral tweet earlier this year. I mean, now it feels like decades ago. I was like, this is what it's going to look like when Cam Newton throws the first 30-yard pass to N'Keal Harry at all the Tom Brady people. And it's Avengers Endgame when everybody comes back through the Doctor Strange portals. They all just show up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going a little weird. Bucks are 3-1, Patriots 2-2, and that was one of the worst quarterback games they've had in a long time on a Monday night. That was not fun.
Not a fun game.
It is amazing. It's my prediction, I think, sort of came true. I said they were going to be prepared, have a good game plan, and it was going to be tight in the first half and maybe open up in the second half, and that's pretty much how it went. Sucks that their quarterbacks were pretty much incompetent. Mm-hmm. Brian Hoyer like making the worst possible mistakes at the worst possible time, which I thought the reason he was in that game was to not make the worst possible decision. That was frustrating, but
I tweeted.
I hope Cam comes back.
I tweeted during the game.
They win that game with Cam Newton because they only gave up 19 points. The defense did. So I think they win like 24-19 if Cam Newton's out there. So
I would agree with that.
Which sucks, but you know it's how it goes.
I tweeted during the game itself after the the sack to end the second quarter. I said, how much more do you need to see, and how much more can you afford to see? Talking about Brian Hoyer playing like garbage and not having the veteran know-how that we were told he would play with. And sure enough, it's the final sequence that cost him. The the turnover on the 13-yard line to begin the second half. Chiefs get the ball, they go down and they score, and that was the ball game. That was the game. And then after that possession, it was Stidham time, and you went from there. But that was, you know, that halftime. I would have pulled the plug at halftime, and I would have said, no, we're going to Stidham here. You screwed up the one thing you couldn't screw up on. I mean, everyone knows that you got to either throw that ball away or make it so there's time on the clock, you know, yeah. and the clock is stopped.
He
did the one thing he couldn't do, and he tried calling timeout. Buddy, you got no timeouts. You should know this. This is why you are 34 years old or whatever and still in the NFL, because you know this.
I think I heard someone with a theory that, like, he knew he was out of timeouts, but he made it look like he thought he had a timeout because he thought that would have somehow been better than, like, actually making the decision that he made.
It's like when guys decide they don't want to go with their girlfriend into Victoria's Secret and they just sit outside of it. And I go, oh, yeah, that looks better. That looks way better.
Yeah.
You're just a guy by himself sitting outside a bra store.
You're staring at women in their underwear. That's way more normal.
Way better than going in and telling the world you have a girlfriend and you are helping her pick out underwear. Way better.
Yeah.
You look totally cool doing that.
You look like way more of a man doing that.
Yeah. Trucks, Spike TV. Yeah, so a text from somebody who's seen Mason Langenbrunner play, because I obviously haven't. He is a project, but he can really skate well. So that fits in with the Bruins looking for in terms of defensemen who can move the puck, help with transition. He is a project, though. He's also, again, as we've said, the son of someone working in their player development program. So
yeah, you got to get an A on that project.
Yeah, so we're going to see what happens there.
We'll see. We'll see. I mean, he doesn't have to be a stud or anything. He needs to be functional. He has to have some value in the organization at some point, whether it's in a trade or anything. How are they going to trade the guy's kid? You know,
fifth round pick. If you get 100 NHL games out of him, it's a success. Fifth round picks are not, you know, they're not NHL regulars typically.
No.
So if you get something out of him at the NHL level, or if you can use him as part of a trade eventually, as awkward as that may be, like we've said. That is a win for you. So we'll see. But I think that's a smart move, is emphasizing a defenseman who can skate. You know, and that's sort of where the game is trending. That's where the system is trending for the Bruins. So add another one of those guys to the list.
All right, I'll take it. All right, I think we should. I should leave you to your devices on the digital side of things, because stuff is about to roll in. Bruins are going to be making more picks. Maybe make trade. Something's going to happen. So this is a good one. This is the best podcast in a while, I think. If you made it this far, thank you. I love you. Please rate and review. Positive reviews only. Thanks to everyone who's already left a nice rating and a nice review. We appreciate you. It's the Sports Hub Sidelines podcast. Hopefully you had fun listening. And we'll talk to you again next week.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.